The Super Bowl is this weekend, a good reminder of what the Green Bay Packers' goal ultimately is. To discuss the big game and how the Packers can get back there next year, we bring on Scott McKenna of the Talkin' Smack blog. It's all coming up on Railbird Central next. Fans, welcome to Railbird Central at 24/7 Sports and Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. We're talking some Packers football this weekend. We're getting ready for the Super Bowl on Sunday and what lies ahead for the Green Bay Packers. To do that, we have us joining us on the phone this morning.
Expert interview.
We have Scott McKenna, the Talkin' Smack blog, joining us as he does the first Friday of every month. Scott, how you doing today?
I'm great, Brian. Thanks for having me.
No problem. It's great to have you on the show, and it's interesting and appropriate here. Here we are just 2 days before the Super Bowl. You live in Denver, despite being a Green Bay Packers fan. I mean, just tell me, what's the vibe like in Denver? And what you think about this Broncos team is they're, you know, 2 days away from playing in the biggest game on the NFL calendar. What we're going to get to Packers talk, but just indulge us here for a few minutes as we just do a little Super Bowl talk.
Sure. Well, Denver is a great sports town, and the town is painted in blue and orange, and you know, the buildings are lit up in blue and orange, and the 16th Street Mall, which is sort of the main drag here in Denver, is littered with just Bronco gear in the windows, and you know, they really are doing it upright, and there's a great flavor here in the fandom of the Denver Broncos right now that, you know, I have to commend them, as the Broncos were, you know, 6-0 and not playing great football earlier in the year. Their fans really kept the faith, and they really believed that things were going to continue to turn the corner, and the team was going to improve much, you know, almost the opposite of what it felt like we dealt with it in Kettletown, USA, and the fandom that really supports that, you know, our great franchise. But they kept the faith, they kept the belief, and they've really been like a cat. They seem to use all nine lives, and they've really survived, you know, a lot of stages or stretches throughout the season where it just felt locally like things were we're going to really fall apart, and they never did, and they stayed the course, and they just kept finding ways to win, and now here they are, four quarters away from you know, winning the Super Bowl.
Scott, I think an appropriate transition here into how we can talk about the Super Bowl and still talk about the Packers at the same time. I'm currently kind of engaged in this conversation on Twitter with Peter Bukowski of Sports Illustrated. And we're discussing Broncos tight end Owen Daniels, who the Packers actually brought in for a visit 2 years ago. He was a street free agent, wouldn't have cost them but $1 million to sign him. I said it at the time. I thought the Packers should have signed him. It was a low risk signing. I think, you know, he's obviously not the player he was in the prime of his career, but if you've seen the Packers tight end situation, Richard Rodgers, Andrew Corliss, nobody's providing a downfield threat. I think as a complementary tight end, Owen Daniels would have been a terrific addition to this Packers team at basically no risk. I guess I want to get your thoughts on Owen Daniels, how he's helping the Denver Broncos, and whether you think he could have fit in to the Packers scheme had they chose to sign him 2 years ago.
Well, there's no doubt about it that he would have fit in. He's a Midwestern guy. I think he's from just outside of Chicago and went to school in Wisconsin. And he kind of gives you the feel of a Wisconsin type guy, hardworking guy. So you'd have been a great addition to the locker room. I really think that the franchise as a whole, and one of the things that we, you know, people that are fantasy or statistical gurus won't think about is the impact that he would make inside the locker room. And then additionally in the run game, I mean, Owen Daniels has been, he's been like an extra tackle out there. And he's a savvy football player. He knows how to seal the edge. And then additionally, he's made some big plays for them this year. I don't have statistics to back me up, but he's made some big plays on crucial third downs, and he understands the game. The other piece about it is, you know, unlike every other tight end for the Green Bay Packers this year, when he gets tackled or he gets hit, he falls forward. He's picking up an extra yard or two. So instead of it being second and eight, it's second and six or second and five, right? Like, and those are big, big plays as far as situational football is concerned. And, you know, I know I was very, very much an advocate in my blog when Daniels came to visit, and I thought it would have been just a great fit for both the Packers and for Daniels. You know, when he was a free agent, prior to the 2014 season. Additionally, what I like to always joke with Packer fans about is, you know, whenever people would say, hey, you know, he wasn't a fit or wouldn't have been a fit or wouldn't have made an impact. Do you think Owen Daniels might have made an impact when the Packers had, what, three chances inside the 5-yard line against the Seahawks, you know, in the NFC Championship? Could he have been an option that got open, or would he have been able to hold a block or sustain a block, right? Like, and I mean, it's all fun to think about, but there is no doubt about it that Owen Daniels, his veteran leadership, his know-how of the game would have been a great addition to the Green Bay Packers, not just this year, but last year as well.
Yeah, I mean, take a look at, you know, I'm talking about a guy who's going to be your number two or your number three tight end on your team. Guess who was the number three tight end last year? A guy who's no longer with the Green Bay Packers because of the mistake he made in the NFC Championship game. Talking about Brandon Bostic, you know, who made the mistake on the onside kick. Maybe he's not even on the roster because the Packers added Owen Daniels. I know this is all hypothetical, but I think he's an improvement over a Brandon Bostic. He's an improvement over a Justin Perillo. Andrew Corliss is a nice blocker. He's definitely, you know, as far as getting downfield, I think Owen Daniels does that a little bit better. But there's room for arguably both those guys and Richard Rodgers. I think he makes the team better at a low-risk signing. Again, like, he wouldn't have cost a compensatory draft pick. He would have cost you $1 million a season. There's so little risk involved in adding somebody like that. I think this is, you know, where the, Ted Thompson went wrong. If he went wrong anywhere, and I think he does a good job by and large, I think he missed the boat on this signing two seasons ago. And, you know, this is kind of all brought about the impetus article by Bob McGinn in today's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, where he talks to Daniels for basically the only person who's ever talked about this visit to Green Bay 2 years ago that's kind of been forgotten by Packers Nation, but just appropriate now that the Super Bowl is upon us. Scott, just before we get into some other topics here, do you have a prediction for the Super Bowl and how it might play out?
Yeah, if I can do this just in a couple of sentences here, it's first and foremost, I thought that the Broncos were going to melt down on a number of occasions this year. I thought that they would struggle in week 16 against the Bengals when they were able to, be able to pull through late. I thought that they would lose to the Steelers. They won that. I thought that they would lose to the Patriots. They won that game. And, you know, on the Sunday of the NFC Championship game, when the Carolina just looked so dominant. I looked at it and thought that, you know, it's the confidence and the calmness and the composure and the coolness of Cam Newton was his destiny. But the closer we get to the Super Bowl, it reminds me of a January 25th, 1998, where the Denver Broncos brought a really good defense, an aged quarterback, and a good running game to San Diego to play a team that had a young quarterback that was entering the prime of his career and had an MVP season and a high powered offense and a very physical defense. And, you know, we know how that ended. I don't want to revisit it too much, but, I just get the feeling that the Denver Broncos, they're a team of destiny this year. And I'm starting to lean Denver 23, Carolina 20, somewhere in that realm.
Yeah, I like it. I think the Denver Broncos defense is the best unit on the field. And I think, you know, that's going to be the deciding factor. I haven't even thought about a score, to tell you the truth. But I do think my prediction is Broncos win, actually, in what I think it'll be a close game. Certainly, I respect the Carolina Panthers. But I'm there with you. I think, Scott, here the Super Bowl is a good reminder of what the Packers' goal ultimately is. And I've asked Scott to come up with a list of the most impressive players from the college All-Star Game circuit that's now over. We're kind of in draft mode here, and how the Packers can improve going forward. Scott has watched all the All-Star Games and not just the Senior Bowl. So we're going to run through them and break down some of the prospects here. Scott, let's start with the least kind of heralded All-Star Game and work our way up to the top or the pinnacle of the All-Star Games, I guess. So let's start with the NFLPA Collegiate Bowl. You provided me a list. You told me one guy who kind of stood out for you was Jatavis Brown, the linebacker from Akron, who was the MAC Defensive Player of the Year. And I kind of like that comparison, or that notable fact, just for the point that, you know, last year the Packers drafted the MAC Defensive Player of the Year. It was Quentin Rollins. Tell me what your thoughts are about Jatavis Brown and what you saw from him in the bowl game.
Well, first and foremost, you got to love that he is he's from the MAC. I mean, you and I are sort of bonded by the Green Bay Packers jam band music and MAC football, right? So, Jatavis Brown is a guy that, you know, I admit that on Tuesday and Wednesday nights during college football season, when there's a good MAC game on, I'm dialed in. And sometimes when there's two games on, I got the DVR set on the other TV. And he's a guy that has caught my eye a couple times this year as just somebody who's not going to really be the player that stacks and sheds, you know, a guard that's getting to the second level and makes a tackle on a running back. That is not going to be his game. But he gets sideline to sideline. He plays with great instincts. He's slippery getting through on blitzes. And one of the things that, you know, I really look at with the Packers and how they evaluate this offseason is, you know, there's going to be a lot of change on the defense. There's no doubt about it with Raji and Dion and Neal and Perry and Casey Hayward. All, you know, all five guys were very impactful for the Packers over the last couple of years. And, you know, now they're all free agents, and I can only imagine that one, maybe two of them are going to be back, would be my prediction. So there's going to have to be an influx of new talent and maybe a change in design of the defense. And, you know, I can see Capers wanting to get faster. I could see, in even if that became at the pain of getting smaller. And, you know, when you look at a guy like Brown and you see, well, you know, I really hope he's going to be at the combine, because his measurables are going to be important to find. And, you know, this time of year, you never know what you're going to get, where you see one website will have him listed at, you know, 210, but another website will have him at 220. And we're seeing somewhat of a wave in the NFL where you're seeing the Levante Davids and the, you know, the Kelvin Smiths. You know, they're undersized. They put on maybe 5 to 10 pounds when they get to the NFL, and all of a sudden they keep their speed. And all of a sudden, these are difference makers that can cover backs in the flat, that can recognize and not be fooled by disguise within offensive designs. And because of it, you know, they're making plays. And what Brown really did, I would say this. With Brown, out of any of the three major All-Star games, Brown was the most impressive player that I watched. And his fourth quarter in the NFLPA game really just had me thinking, you just got to find a spot for this guy on the field. plays fast, and you know, really, when he hits you, you're hitting the ground. And then one last thing is with Brown, if and I know you're big on watching all the bowl season, really diving into bowl season as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was just absolutely dominant in his bowl game and really secured the victory for Akron as well. So, you know, I'm big on watching how guys play when the lights are on, when the spotlight and all the scouts are out. How does that guy perform? Because at the college level, that is really the best indication in my eye as to how their game is going to translate to the NFL. And, you know, every single time that I've seen Brown play, he is he's caught my attention, and he's intrigued my prospect just a little bit more.
I guess I'll just ask you this, as the kind of playing devil's advocate a little bit. You know, the Packers already have Joe Thomas on their roster, kind of the dime linebacker, a little bit undersized. He's even a little bit taller than Jatavis Brown, from what I can tell from their listed heights. I mean, is Jatavis Brown an upgrade when the Packers already have that type of player on the roster?
I would absolutely think so. You know, I was really pulling for Joe Thomas to be able to take the next step in his career. And I was pretty vocal with that, when he got cut, and then when he got brought back, I was really excited. And for me, I just thought that Joe Thomas played small. And when I watched Brown kind of plays, you know, he plays bigger than what his yeah. measurables are going to show. And, for me, he's the guy that's seeking contact, and he's the guy that is, you know, he's forcing fumbles at the college level. And, you know, there's been a great tradition of MAC players making big impacts in the NFL. And, you know, I would not be surprised if Brown is going to be the guy that takes that next step.
Interesting. Okay. Next All-Star game, the East-West Shrine game. One guy who caught your eye, Victor Ochi, the defensive end / outside linebacker from Stony Brook. And I guess if we can, you know, transition into some Packers talk here, you know, they have a couple outside linebackers who are entering free agency. Mike Neal, Nick Perry, you mentioned that. What do you think the future is at the position, and how a guy like Ochi could potentially fit into the Packers' schemes?
The Packers need to get more situational. They need to get more rotational at that defensive end spot, outside linebacker spot, I think. You know, right? I really feel, you know, moving into next year, I think the writing is on the wall that they're going to give Dayton Jones a chance to really earn that first round draft pick status. And mm-hmm. he's going to walk into next year being the guy that's starting at one of those outside linebacker or edge players, if you will. And with that said, I don't see Dayton Jones as a guy that's going to strike fear into the minds of an offensive coordinator on third down. Really, really solid first and second down defensive end or outside linebacker. But on third down, I think Jones is better on the inside than he is on the outside. And the Packers need to, you know, to steal a page from what the Broncos are doing. Broncos are just consistently rotating guys at outside linebacker in a 3-4, defense, I might add. And each one of these guys has great burst off the football. And one of the things that really caught my eye with Ochi is Ochi, yes, he too is undersized. Very curious to see what his official measurements are. I've seen him as 6'1", I've seen him as 6'2", and I've seen him at, 240, I've seen him up to 245. So does that mean that he's, 6'5" and 235? Because then he can't, it's going to be tough for him to transition. But he looks like he's got long arms. He had great burst off the football. In fact, I thought out of the three games, and somebody playing along the line of scrimmage, he was the quickest that I saw off the football. And I always turn back to KGB back in, the early 2000s. What made him such a stud as a pass rusher was his burst right off the football. And Ochi seemed to have that. He really was able to dip his shoulder. He had a nice tug, and he'd pull you and tug you away, and be able to as a second move if his initial move was stopped. And he was just consistently in the face of various quarterbacks. And whether Ochi is a fit in Green Bay, not 100%, because I do think that we need length, and I do think that we do need disruption if you're not going to get to the quarterback, which is going to be your move as far as getting your hands in the air. But what I will say is his burst off the ball was something that absolutely caught my eye, and I think that is an addition to this defense that we absolutely need.
All right, let's turn our attention to the Senior Bowl then, the top all-star game on the college football circuit. One guy who caught your eye, San Jose State running back Tyler Irvin, who is kind of one of those mighty mites. He's not very big. He's like, 5'9". I think he's one of those guys who's powerful for his size, but not, compared to an Eddie Lacy or James Starks. But, what's interesting here is the Packers, they've kind of gone away from, the traditional third down back. And I think to their detriment over the years, they've really, when you look at the third down back they kept this past year out of training camp, they kept that Alonzo Harris, another big guy, at the expense of the kid out of Tennessee last year. Why is the name escaping?
Rajon Neal.
I thought that was a mistake on the Packers' part, but they've kind of, that Mike McCarthy prefers the bigger back. What do you see out of Tyler Irvin and what his type of, that type of player could add to the Packers' offense?
Well, I think that one of McCarthy's greatest strengths is his creativity within the offense. And, he's tried to sort of have that, create a roster spot by not keeping that scat back, but then by using the Ty Montgomery's or the Randall Cobb as sort of that player and putting him there. But the reality is there's not much of a threat of Montgomery or Cobb consistently running the football. So defenses maybe don't have to adjust as much as when you've got, say, Theo Riddick on the field or Darren Sproles or, McCluster showed glimpses for a while as well. And, I think that Irvin really brings this. If you ask Irvin to pass protect, you're going to get burnt. But if you're putting Irvin in and in specific duties where, he's going to be a target and he's going to come on wheel routes and you're going to spread him to the outside and you're going to take him, you're going to have him run little short screens, the little down and outs that come through the middle of the field, and you're putting an inside linebacker, in a position where he has to cover him in one-on-one. Well, Irvin's going to win that battle. Additionally, Irvin's fearless for his size as far as running the football, and he's not afraid to take the football between the tackles. And, I love, if you go back and watch his bowl game, I think he played Georgia State, and you just watch their first possession of the game, you'll want Irvin on your team. And it's funny, the first down they run him, and he runs right between the tackles, and he picks up roughly 10 yards, and then they're sending him on a wheel route, and they're sending him right down the middle of the field, and he's 5 yards beyond, the linebacker that's tackling him. He's just got great wiggle. He's got great shake. And I think what he would do is he would add great diversity to the offense and really give another safety valve, for Aaron Rodgers when he's stepping back to pass and he's really turned to look to throw underneath. And I think that Irvin is the type of guy that when he's short of the first down marker and he's got the ball in his hands, he knows how to find the sticks. And yeah, that was just something in our offense this year that really was missing, was yards after the catch underneath. And I think he would bring that sort of shake. And additionally, I think he would add to our arsenal as far as our special teams are concerned. I think he'd bring great value as a potential kick returner, a potential punt returner. And, we had a bunch of different bodies over the last couple of years that have played that role. So, I see value in Irvin additionally, and I look at him as a guy that's going to be, a fifth roughly a fifth round draft pick, and I think he would bring great value and diversity to our offense.
I agree, and a guy who's kind of like him is Josh Ferguson of Illinois, who played in the East-West Shrine Game, and I think they're kind of can bring a similar dimension in that fact. But another player you mentioned was Eric Murray. And I thought this was interesting because, Scott, if I know you, you're always looking at guys through the Packers lens and the Packers angle. And here you are giving me a cornerback from Minnesota. And the Packers don't necessarily need a cornerback. I mean, could they use depth if Casey Hayward leaves? Maybe. But what did you see out of Murray from Minnesota?
So I love Murray's game. I think he's going to have a great NFL career. And one of the you know, positions that I pride myself on my eye for is, you know, even though I fully consider myself an amateur, is to watch the cornerback play. And when you watched, I was really into Devondre Campbell for Minnesota, and really I loved his physique, and I kept watching him, waiting for him to really catch my eye and make me a firm believer. And every time I watched him, Murray was the guy. And he too, I'm very curious to see what his measurables are, because some people have him at 5'10" and some people have him at 6 foot. And if he comes in at 6 foot, he's a little handsy. But, you know, last year, I remember when we were talking pre-draft, and I was saying, well, I'd stay away from Darby because Darby's too handsy. Well, he figured the hands out, and all of a sudden, look at him.
Yep.
He was a superstar this year for Buffalo. So I'm kind of feeling like Murray's the same way. The guy's going to be able to run. He's very, very, very physical. He'll get in your face, the line of scrimmage. And I kind of feel like he could play both inside and outside. And we're playing right now in an NFL where you just can't have enough cornerbacks. One thing that I'd like to add about these three All-Star games, not a lot of players jumped out at me as great first or second round talent,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of goodness found potentially in rounds 3 through 7, and maybe the undrafted pick, which is, I know, is another thing that you and I enjoy talking about. But the Murray is the kind of guy that, depending on how he measures and how he runs, I think he's got the instincts and the natural know-how to potentially be the kind of guy that does really surprise people between now and draft day. And great length, he breaks on the ball real well, didn't have all the statistics at the college level to show for it, but I think schematically he would fit in Green Bay, and he could play both on the perimeter and the slot, which, the Packers' depth at the secondary now. If you look at it, Randall was injured a lot this year, played, but was injured. Rollins, injured often this year, played a lot, but injured. And Sammy Shields was out for a while. So we need depth in the secondary, and we'll touch on this, I'm sure, in future discussions. But, the Packers are drafting at least one cornerback this year. There's no doubt in my mind about it. And right now, seeing the value that Murray, I think, brings in the middle rounds, he would be a guy that I'm certainly going to be targeting.
Well, Scott, thank you so much for providing this. I think you provided a service, because I even listen to NFL draft podcasts from time to time. And I'll tell you what, they're not talking about Jatavis Brown and Eric Murray and Tyler Irvin. They're talking about the studs in the first rounders. So I think you provided a service that is underserved out there in the podcasting community. So good discussion. Thanks for joining us here for, as usual, your monthly engagement. And enjoy the Super Bowl.
Likewise, Brian. Go Pack, go, man.
All right. Take care. Scott McKenna of the Talkin' Smack blog joining us as he does the first Friday of every month here at Railbird Central. Thanks to him for joining us. Thanks to you, the listener, for joining us as well as we continue on with the show.
Packers news of the day.
In the world of the Green Bay Packers, over the past 48 hours since our last episode, I think one of the bigger storylines to come out was that of Randall Cobb and his punctured lung. Cobb told during, I guess first a little bit of background in that Cobb was originally said to have a bruised lung in the immediate aftermath of the game when he was interviewed. And I know Mike McCarthy in his press conference had said the same thing. Well, you know, Randall Cobb was at Super Bowl 50 this week, and, you know, he's doing his rounds on Radio Row and things like that. And he was joining all sorts of people. And one of the people he joined was Jim Rome of CBS Sports Network. And they kind of talked about his injury. And as it turns out, Cobb had a punctured lung, not just bruised, but punctured. Man, that sounds painful to me. But what's interesting was how it was punctured. You know, if you remember, you know, the play he goes out on in the divisional round playoff game in Minnesota, he lands on his back making that one-handed catch, which was great. But, you know, he was mic'd up for the game for television or for NFL Films or whoever it was that had him mic'd up. And the battery pack was kind of attached to the shoulder pads in the back. And, he landed squarely on his back on that play. And he said, you know, it's It's very unusual to puncture a lung if you don't have a broken rib or a cracked rib or something that would, you know, jab into the lung, basically. And he thinks that maybe, you know, he's like, yeah, I can't prove it, but, you know, he just obviously landed square in the back, and maybe that thing just poked between ribs just enough to get that lung. And obviously you saw the aftermath. You could see him. They caught him on the broadcast, you know, like coughing up blood on the sidelines. Just really kind of, I guess it's a freak kind of accident. I mean, you never really expect anything, especially attached to your back, that it's going to be, you know, that's really going to come into play. I don't know how big the battery pack is. I imagine, you know, what technology, what it is nowadays, they're fairly small, I would think. But I mean, makes you think twice. I mean, if it's going to cause a punctured lung, is that really the best thing for him to be doing? Maybe Randall Cobb will think twice before ever being mic'd up for a game again. I don't know. I mean, you enjoy, I think I do. I think many people do, you know, when you see those things on TV and you hear these guys mic'd up, it's a nice thing to watch once in a while. But just crazy how that happened. And just one more final note here in terms of notable Packers news this week. Julius Peppers, if you remember, in the immediate aftermath of the playoff loss to the Cardinals, in the locker room after the game, you know, reporters asked Julius Peppers about his future. You know, are you going to play next season? They said, I'm not sure. And basically, you know, after the game, just left it at that. He did not say anything definitively one way or the other. But this last week, this, whatever it was, at the Pro Bowl, you know, Julius Peppers was there in Hawaii, and so was Jason Cole of Bleacher Report, who covered the game out there, talked to Julius Peppers, and Peppers told him that he plans to play in 2016 or hopes to play. So basically taking retirement off the table. Now the question just comes down to whether or not the Packers are going to honor Julius Peppers' contract that he signed with the team, you know, back in 2014. Now it was a 3-year contract, the final year of which, 2016, he has a base salary of $10.5 million, or the base salary, something like $8 million, but his salary cap figure, which is, you know, how the salary cap is counted for, is $10.5 million, which is a lot. I mean, basically, you know, it's interesting. It breaks down almost exact. I mean, this past season, Julius Peppers had 10.5 sacks. You know, if he were to replicate that at $10.5 million, you're basically paying $1 million a sack from Julius Peppers. I mean, if you want to look at it that way, which, you know, obviously you're not getting just sacks and sacks only for him, but just an interesting way to look at it. I think the Packers bite the bullet and they just, you know, keep Julius Peppers at the dollar amount they signed him for. Maybe you approach Peppers and be like, can we restructure it a little bit and gain a little bit of space? Maybe in his last year, he might be willing. And especially if they were to, you know, go out and sign somebody in free agency to help the team, maybe he might be amenable to creating a little bit of space there. But, you know, they almost would have to have a reason for like going out and asking him for that, because I mean, Julius Peppers could just decline and be like, no. And then you're faced with either, you know, paying him or cutting him. And I don't think the Packers, if he's willing to play in 2016, I think you want Julius Peppers on your team. Just, you know, he's not, you know, what he used to be, but he still is a very good football player and can provide a pass rush off the edge and in the interior, almost as much in the interior now as he did back then. So, you know, that'll do it for Packers news. And finally,
the day ahead
in the world of the Green Bay Packers, you know, there's not a whole lot of Packers stuff going on being Super Bowl weekend, but you know, maybe not Friday, but over the weekend, I guess the big thing is Saturday night, we will learn the Pro Football Hall of Fame class of 2016 and almost guaranteed to include former Green Bay Packers quarterback Brett Favre. I mean, there's really not even a question here. He's going to be in, but it becomes official on Saturday. I think it will be announced during that annual NFL Honors Award show that they've been having now for about 4 or 5 years, the night before the Super Bowl. So it'll be on CBS, same broadcast network that's airing the Super Bowl. So expect Brett Favre to be officially named to the Hall of Fame. And that's your big Packers connection for the weekend, there. And that, you know, pretty much does it for the weekend, at least. So, we'll be back again on Monday. We'll recap a little bit about the Super Bowl. In fact, I'm bringing, one of my colleagues on the show, Ian McHugh, the Broncos writer for 24/7 Sports, to join us on the show. And we'll talk a little bit him about the game, and we'll try to get some Packers angles in there too. Obviously, it's a little bit tough when the Packers aren't playing and the NFL world is revolving around a few other teams. But I'm sure everyone out there listening to this show is a big football fan in general and is going to be watching the Super Bowl this weekend. And we'll see how the Packers can get back there next year. But that'll do it, folks. Thank you, everybody, so much for joining us on the show. Thank you to Scott McKenna, the Talking Smack blog, for joining us. My call to action, as usual, as always, if you've not done so already, please give us a rating and a review on iTunes. Search Cheesehead TV. It'll pull it right up. We'd really appreciate it. We don't expect you to write a novel, but just write something short. This show is free of charge, no subscription, no paywall. So it's the one small thing we ask that you could do in return. And that'll do it. We'll see you, folks. Here you go. I leave you today with a song called Rosie by String Cheese Incident on Psy Fidelity Records. See ya. Go Pack. Go.